It's time to hear from the Green Party with co-leader James Shaw.
This week I chatted to Green Party co-leader James Shaw on the recent prisoner voting rights amendments. However, the Greens are pushing for all prisoners to have the right to vote, as currently only those serving a 3-year or under sentence. We also speak on the changes to the RMA, which has long been criticised for not adequately protecting the environment and other interest groups, including tangata whenua. And finally, we speak about the Green Party's recent poverty action plan, and we discuss about support given to those struggling, especially with the difficult times for many moving forward. I begin by asking James about the prisoner voting rights.
The legislation simply returns us to the status quo of about 10 years ago, before it was a private member's bill from a National Party MP who removed the right to vote from all prisoners. But the way that the Green Party thinks about this is the vote is a human right. Right? Prisoners are human, and therefore they have the right to vote. It's a pretty straightforward thing for us. And the idea that you lose your right to vote as an additional punishment on top of your incarceration never been made clear in the law. And so therefore, it's inconsistent to say that, you know, people who are serving sentences of one length can vote, while people who are serving sentences of another length can't.
As someone on our news team, actually, with a bunch of law students, went and submitted in support of this bill. However, during the debates and discussion, they kept being brought up by Nick Smith in regards to, well, how dare you let someone like the, for example, he kept bringing up the Christchurch terrorists. So what do you say in response to that kind of argument that pops up?
Well, first of all, the Christchurch terrorist is an Australian. Our point is that there's nothing in New Zealand law that says that losing the right to vote is an additional punishment on top of your incarceration, right? There's nothing that says that. The Human Rights Commission and I think even the Supreme Court have actually said that it is inconsistent with the New Zealand Bill of Rights to remove the franchise. It is just one of those things that we say in a democratic society, everybody has the right to vote. If you do a crime, then you get sent to prison. That's, you know, appropriate, right? But it doesn't, that's not linked to your inalienable human rights.
Recently, over the weekend, the Green Party announced kind of the first few policies that you guys are pushing for. And so I wanted to talk about the Poverty Action Plan.
What we announced, as you say, Poverty Action Plan, the central feature of which is to replace our existing income support system with a guaranteed minimum income. Now, the idea here is that basically everybody who needs it receives at least $325 a week. And it's comparable, actually, to the wage subsidy that was paid out back in, well, it is actually still being paid out, but started under the level 4 lockdown under COVID, where, you know, we said to New Zealanders, look, you know, we're going through a rough time here as a country. Everybody who needs help will get it. And basically no questions asked, or very few questions asked. And what that demonstrated to us is that actually we do have the resource and the capability to ensure that people who need support can receive it. So what we want to do is we want to take our kind of social safety net, which has got massive holes in it. It's incredibly punitive. It's not actually enough to live on by quite some considerable stretch. And it's riddled with sanctions and so on, and just say, look, if you need support, it's there and it's available to you. So that's the kind of the centrepiece of it. There are top-ups for, you know, parents and children, for example, people with disabilities. The flip side of all of this is that we're intending to pay for it with a tax on the net wealth of people who have over $1 million worth of assets, which is about 6% of New Zealanders.
Moving forward, this will be a 1% tax on those who have $1 million, and then 2% for those who have over $2 million.
Yeah.
I guess, why this figure? Because I guess 1% is kind of small, if you think about it. I mean, some people might think that's huge, but for a millionaire, 1% isn't actually that much, but that money that is being taxed, I don't know. I'm just asking why that figure.
Well, this is the remarkable thing about wealth distribution in New Zealand, is that if you put a tax of 1%, and it's not actually on the million, it's on every dollar over a million, right? So, you know, your combined assets up to $1 million won't attract any tax at all. And then if you have a combined assets of $1 million and $1, then you will pay 1 cent of that $1 over $1 million, right? In other words, you'll pay one cent tax. So the remarkable thing about it is that even at that level, it raises close to $9 billion a year once it's fully up and running. And that would easily cover the cost of the guaranteed minimum income that we outlined over the weekend. And so what we're trying to demonstrate here is that actually we can fix poverty in Aotearoa. We actually can if we choose to do it. But because in New Zealand our tax system really comes down to taxes on people who work through income taxes and on consumers via GST, and we don't tax wealth in this country, and actually, you know, lots of other countries do. And a fairly simple and straightforward tax with a high threshold and a broad base will actually raise sufficient revenue for us to make a massive dent on poverty in Aotearoa.
So you say that there will also be two new tax brackets introduced, those over 100,000 and then those over 150,000. But what would your response be to those who have met this with hostility? So there's this rhetoric, particularly from the middle class, that they're deserving of this money and that they've worked extremely hard. And so this has met some hostility to a tax bracket in terms of people within who fall within this threshold.
Well, again, it's only about 7% of New Zealanders who would pay those higher taxes. And we've also had a lot of feedback from people who are in those brackets, over 100,000 and over 150,000, who are basically saying, I want to solve poverty, take my money, you know? And that actually, you've got to remember, it's marginal tax rates, right? So you only pay the increased rate on every dollar over 100,000. You don't pay it on anything under 100,000. Same with the bracket at 150. So it actually amounts to very little additional tax per person, but it does help to, you know, contribute to ensuring that we live in a society where everybody's looked after. And I think it's actually a moral choice. Do we want to continue to allow endemic poverty to exist in New Zealand, or do we want to fix it?
Something I wanted to pick apart a bit more is that I'm seeing an increase of narratives around people who view that if they're in the middle class, that they've deserved that position and it's because of hard work that's got them there, and whereas there's this narrative of those who might be struggling, it's because of a lack of hard work. So what do you say to that kind of narrative that I've seen kind of increase?
Well, I think it's nonsense. Mm-hmm. If wealth accumulation was a function only of hard work, then nurses would be multimillionaires, you know, because and the people who clean out, you know, offices and so on, you know, who are amongst the lowest paid, most vulnerable workers in the country. They work the longest hours for the lowest pay. They work incredibly hard. It is not a function of hard work, or it's not only a function of hard work that enables you to accumulate wealth. Mm. So things like if, let's say, you know, you kind of are born into a poor family, later on in life, you've managed to become a multimillionaire, and good on you for that. You will have benefited from a public education yourself. Also, if you started a business and you employ people, they will have had a public school education. Your productivity will be what it is, in part because the health system is there to support people who are unwell and have to take time off work and get better quickly so that they can get back to work. The logistics that your business depends on, roads that are publicly funded and freight that runs on the rail system that was built by the state over 100 years ago. You know, all of these things are a function of the society that you live in. And in New Zealand, we are very lucky that in our modern history, for the most part, it's been pretty well run, and we've invested well in things like health and education and in infrastructure upon which anybody can, you know, build a business and so on. But ultimately, you know, so much of it comes down to the circumstances of birth. And, you know, if you were a child that grew up in an overcrowded, mouldy, damp house and take a lot of time off school because you had respiratory illnesses and your parents didn't have, you know, a strong educational back, chances are that you will not end up in a situation where you are able to take advantages of what society has on offer. And people like me, who grew up in a middle-class educated household, you know, had all of that stuff available, it's a whole lot easier, right? So I think that notion that it just comes down to hard work. I mean, hard work is involved, right? Don't get me wrong, but it's not the only factor.
I think there's a lot of self-reflecting that needs to be done in terms of people addressing the privileges that they have.
Yeah, there is. And in the meantime, why don't we just help each other out to ensure that a few other people have those privileges too?
And so finally today, I thought we'll talk about the RMA amendment. So a lot of changes recently. And so this has been heralded as being quite a significant change in terms of the way we deal with climate change and emissions. And so what amendment has occurred?
Well, so this is a really big deal. And I like to think of it as the trifecta of our climate legislation. So we had the Zero Carbon Act, which passed in November of last year. We had the big reforms to the emissions trading scheme, which passed about 3 weeks ago. And then what happened last week was that we passed the third reading of one of the resource management amendment bills. And what it does is it says that when a project has been considered for a resource consent, that the impact of that project on climate change can be taken into consideration. And so, because we've had this ridiculous situation previously where a project could get called in for a resource consent, like, say, a gas-fired power station, but it was actually against the law to consider the impact that that fossil fuel, you know, electricity generation has on the climate. And that's kind of absurd. And so we fixed that, and we said, actually, climate change is one of the things that should be considered when a resource consent comes up.
How is this determined? And so is it looking at the kind of emissions that might be, or are there numerous factors that would be taken into account as to whether a project is good for the climate or bad?
Yeah, look, there are a lot of considerations, and we also want to avoid a situation where every council interprets the rules differently, and every time somebody wants to build a house, you know, somebody blocks it on the basis of its impact on climate change or anything like that. So over the course of the next 2 years, we're developing something under the Resource Management Act called a National Policy Statement, which sets out guidelines for councils that they have to follow about what's material and what are the kinds of things that you would consider. So the actual impact of the law change won't take place for a couple of years while we get that NPS, that National Policy Statement, through. The work on that's going to start happening very shortly.
And are we going to see any other changes to the RMA as well? Because I remember like a few weeks back we were talking about how David Clark's been pushing for quite a few changes, kind of a big reform on the RMA in general. So what can we look forward to?
Yeah, so there are a couple of things. There's actually another bill that's passing through the House under urgency at the moment that we're a bit more sceptical of, and that's a fast-track bill which will bypass a lot of the kind of public hearings and so on in order to get a few projects up and running to help get things going after COVID. And the Green Party is kind of very cautious about that because it overrides a lot of the really good things in the RMA. So we're just kind of treading quite carefully through that one. But the other one is that there's been a review led by a retired judge, Tony Randerson, over the course of the last couple of years. And it's looking at a total overhaul of the Resource Management Act because, you know, frankly, it is a bit of a mess. Every single government keeps amending it. It's now over twice as long as it was when it was first written in 1990. It is very convoluted, and so we just want to make sure that actually it is probably about time for a total overhaul, and I think we're quite looking forward to seeing what that review comes out and says we should do.
That was James Shaw for the Green Party. The Wire.
We'll be